Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You know, we love history on this show, and especially a history that tells a personal story, which is why we are excited to have UCLA history professor Sarah Abrevia Stein on the show today. Her newest book is called Family Papers, A Sephardic Journey Through the 20th Century, and it charts several generations of one Jewish family through their letters. Their letters are the physical things that connected the family to each other over the course of a century and across continents, from modern-day Greece to Brazil and even India. Stein's book uncovers not just the story of one family, but also a little-known history of the Jewish inhabitants of a city once called Salonika and their descendants. Her research took her around the world to uncover the family's writings and even unearth a surprising and very dark corner of the family's history. With me now to discuss this fascinating work is Sarah Stein. Sarah, welcome to All of It.
Thanks, Allison. Pleasure to be here.
So you begin the book with, I'm going to ask you to correct any pronunciation, please.
Sure.
You begin the book with Sadi, the patriarch of the Levi family in the 19th century. Can you tell us a little bit about him and this memoir which you described as being written in a humble notebook?
Absolutely. My path to this book came through another project, which was the translation of what scholars understand to be the first memoir ever written in Ladino, the Judeo-Spanish language of the Sephardic Jews of southeastern Europe and the Mediterranean region. And the author of that memoir, Sadi Bezalel Ashkenazi Alevi, had the memoir. He dictated it to a scribe, and he had it written in a very inexpensive notebook that I set out to translate and publish in an annotated English form with my colleague Aaron Rodrigue and wonderful translator Isaac Drew Salmi some years ago. And I was fascinated not only by the story that Sadi told about his life and his world, but also I was fascinated by the journey this flimsy notebook took, which was from his birthplace of Ottoman Salonika, which is current-day Thessaloniki, Greece. It traveled from there to Paris, from Paris to Rio de Janeiro, from Rio de Janeiro to Jerusalem. And as it journeyed through family hands, amazingly, this slender notebook survived the collapse of the empire in which it was written, major fires, wars, a genocide, the burning of libraries and private manuscript collections, and somehow this document weathered that extraordinary journey. And as I finished the translation, I set out to find out what had become of this memoirist's descendants and how they had preserved this document, which in turn led me to the extraordinary discovery that there were many, many more documents charting a century of the family's history.
Your description of the survival of that notebook is something I think a lot of us needed to hear today.
Yes.
I'd love to have you read an excerpt from the beginning of your book. Would you mind?
I would be delighted. This is the story of a single Sephardic family whose roots connect them to a place and community that no longer exist. The place was the port city of Ottoman Salonika, present-day Thessaloniki, Greece, one of the few cities in modern Europe ever to claim a Jewish majority. The community was made up mostly of Ladino or Judeo-Spanish-speaking Jews, Sephardic families who traced their ancestry back to Sepharad, medieval Iberia, from which they were expelled in the 1490s, but who, for the next five centuries, called the Ottoman Empire, southeastern Europe, and Salonika home. Today, the papers of the Levi family are spread across nine countries and three continents. The single largest collection, the papers of Leon Levi, is kept by his four grandchildren in a private vault in Rio de Janeiro. It consists of nearly 5,000 handwritten and typed letters, telegrams, photographs, legal and medical documents, and miscellany, address books, expired passports, and more. By far the largest private archive I have encountered as a professional historian and near obsessive document hunter.
That's so interesting. That's all the detail that you were talking about before. By the way, my guest is Sarah Abrevia Stein. The name of her book is Family Papers, A Sephardic Journey Through the 20th Century. You talked a bit in that last sentence about your habits as a researcher. The New York Times described you as having, quote, ferocious research talents. How long did you research this book? Well, and if you could share some of the methods you used to track down these living family members.
Yes, I mean, one could interpret it as a kind or unkind description, depending, I suppose, on one's interpretation. But to me, it is a great compliment to be called ferocious, because I think that to write an intimate history, a family history, especially of a diasporic community like this one, one really does have to be somewhat relentless in one's methods, because the papers, like the people, are spread across the world. And as I describe in the book, my journey through this family history compelled me to seek out private collections held by families, to sit in living rooms with descendants across the world. I describe in the book how I found material in Brazil and Canada and France and Germany and Britain and Greece and Hungary and Israel and Italy and Portugal, as well as in the States, and also to seek out supplemental materials in what I would call formal archives, also across the world. And these documents come in many languages and many forms. Sometimes a family sits on an enormous collection, like the one I described in the selection I just read, and sometimes people are sitting on single items, but they are rare and precious, and they fill out a complete sort of holistic, globally diasporic family story. So it was over the course of roughly a decade that I followed this family in all the directions that it led me, some entirely unexpected.
Was there a moment that you thought you'd hit a wall, and how did you go around it?
Well, I felt very blessed through this research process that doors were open to me. I think people understood the uniqueness of their family history. They understood that they held materials in languages that they could not understand, and also that told stories that they could not understand without a broader context. I think many of the family members were excited and honored that their family history would be written in this way. But that's not to say that one finds everything. So even if doors weren't closed, there were dead ends. There were branches of the family whose histories I couldn't reconstruct. And of course, partly because, and we can talk about this later if you wish, the Holocaust devastates entire branches of the family. Although I was able to reconstruct many Second World War histories, there are also family members and therefore stories that are simply attenuated during that painful time. So it was a mixture. It was a mixture, as historical research always is, of the thrill of discovery and also the frustration of knowing there are limits to any story being fully complete.
My guest is UCLA history professor Sarah Abrevia Stein. Her book is called Family Papers, A Sephardic Journey Through the 20th Century. I should say her newest book. Would you mind describing Salonika at the end of the 19th century and the turn of the 20th century? How diverse it was? How many languages were spoken?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, this is an extraordinarily unique community, not only for the Sephardic world, but for the modern Jewish world. As I said in my reading a moment ago, it's one of the few cities in the modern world to have a Jewish majority or Jewish plurality, depending on the time period you are talking about. It is, in the Ottoman era, the late 19th, early 20th century, the third largest port. It's a city cross-cut by merchants and consuls and foreigners and locals of many, many backgrounds, speaking many languages. And in this community, Jews number about 60,000 of a population of roughly 100,000 at the end of the 19th century. And for the Jewish community itself, it is diverse. Most of these Jews are Sephardic, so they are the descendants of these Jews expelled from medieval Iberia. And most of them maintain a Judeo-Spanish language, but they are living alongside a diverse Jewish and non-Jewish population. So the city is home to Jews of various backgrounds, to Muslims, to Greek Orthodox and other Christians, to Donme, that's the descendants of Jews who followed the self-proclaimed Messiah, Shabbatai Tzvi, into Islam in the 17th century. So this is a bustling urban entrepot, a cosmopolitan city, and the Jewish imprint is really, really deep. The I describe in the book how in Salonika, because of its multiculturalism, the Sabbath is celebrated on three different days, but the city, the port, shuts down on the Jewish Sabbath. How many places can this be true in modern Europe, in the modern Mediterranean, that this is an Ottoman city and a Mediterranean city and a cosmopolitan city, but it is also undeniably a Jewish city, and one is more likely to hear Ladino being spoken on the streets than any other language.
What happened to that community?
Yes,
that
well,
Jewish community?
The community experiences so many of the dramas that affect modern Europe and the modern Mediterranean and Middle East in the late 19th and early 20th century. They experience the end of their empire, in which they had their families had lived for 500 years, the transition of the region during and just before and during the First World War and after, the fragmenting of this empire into new nation states. Salonika becomes Greece after being Ottoman for all of this time. The families in this family, like many of the Jewish families in this community, make different choices. Some decide to emigrate across the world, but especially to Sephardic and Jewish centers like Manchester and Paris and New York. Some decide to stay and throw in their lot with the new nation state. Many are nervous about what the creation of a nation state will mean for minorities, because they understand very well that across Europe, the rise of nationalism is very threatening to minority communities. Salonikan Jews experience a massive fire in 1917, along with all residents of the city, that really decimates the commercial heart, and this also pushes many abroad. And after all of these dramatic evolutions, the First World War is experienced so viscerally in the city, which is a place where Allied troops are stationed. After all of this, and much emigration and much political turmoil within the community, it is, during the Second World War, absolutely devastated by annihilation, and in Salonika in particular, and for the Greek Jewish community more generally, the rates of destruction are about as high as any community by percentage in all of Europe. So certain places like Warsaw lose more people because there are more to begin with, but by percentage, this community will lose virtually the most, 98% of its pre-war community will be annihilated. But still, there is a Salonikan Jewish diaspora that one can sort of track through this family's history and the history of others. So while it's a tale of the loss of a cultural homeland, it's also a tale of reinvention and dispersal and persistence.
My guest is UCLA Professor Sarah Stein. The name of her newest book is Family Papers, A Sephardic Journey Through the 20th Century. I alluded to it in your intro. In the course of your research, you found this family had a great resilience, but it also had a dark chapter. Would you share a bit about that?
Yes, I will. So setting out to tell this story, I expected that it would have a painful Holocaust chapter, which indeed it did. The family is devastated, along with the Jews of Salonika. Not only the Jews in Salonika are annihilated in great numbers in this family, in the Levy family, but also many who had emigrated to other places in Europe, especially Paris, get caught in the dragnet once the Nazis occupy that city. So I do trace this history of annihilation, of those who are sent to labor camps, of forced labor, of, alas, all of the twists and turns of this Second World War story that we expect. And yet there was also an incredibly painful chapter to discover, and it's truly painful for the historian to come upon this story, as much as I know it is for the family, that a cousin in the family is a member of the Jewish police in Salonika, and a notorious sadist who is accused in testimonials, many, many testimonials in many, many languages by survivors, and other sources corroborate this story, accused of being responsible for abetting the deportation of Jews from Salonika, the pursuit of those fleeing the Nazis into hiding, of sexual violence, of spoliation, you know, theft of property. He is accused of all of these things. He is, after a very harrowing and complex story of escape, he is caught, brought back to Greece after the war, and tried, and is the only Jew in all of Europe to be tried by a state, that is Greece, and found guilty for abetting the Nazis during the war and executed for his crimes. And this painful, painful story is effectively erased from the family's own record-keeping and their memory, and really could only be reconstructed through sources that are not in family hands, which gets us back to the complexity of method and how you go about reconstructing a family's story.
Absolutely. When you think about the power of family papers and correspondence, it's understandable within a family, the power and the importance of them. When you think about them for the greater public, for the general public, what is the power of learning about a family like this, of learning about their correspondence, of thinking about how their correspondence survived?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think family history is such an accessible human way for us to access a broader historical landscape. It allows us to think about the histories of people whose stories normally don't get written, histories of children, of mothers, of the relationships between siblings, let's say, between cousins. These are, as I said before, these are intimate histories. These are human histories. And they give us access not only to voices that other kinds of histories don't normally attend to, but I think they make us see world events differently. They make us see them through human eyes and through the day-to-day, really very physical experience of individuals who we can relate to on a human level. Right now, you and I are speaking by phone instead of in person, as we are practicing social isolation in the era of COVID-19. And this family, for example, weathered several cholera outbreaks in their city, which took from them children and the elderly. And so many historical happenings, the stories of refugees, of war, of displacement, of people trying to stay in touch despite separation and migration and violence around them. All of these are things that I think we can relate to as individuals today if we tell these stories through a family's history.
The name of the book is Family Papers, A Sephardic Journey Through the 20th Century. Sarah Stein, thank you so much for being with us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much, Allison.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.